Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston, maybe? Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. In a world without Jack, because he got a new job co-hosting, Melody Lauer!
Melody Lauer in the house.
No, that's not going to work. You're going to have to come up with something better for the next show.
It's just every one. I'm going to have to choose something different, and one of them is going to stick.
We should do an on. So Joe just said we should do an online poll as far as to what the
what my intro should be.
You could like co-opt Jack's. Yay!
No, and just because it would seem I would miss him.
Well, he didn't die.
Well, no, but I still miss him.
I mean, he's going to one day.
We miss you, Jack.
We do. He's large and makes bad life choices, but you know.
We all make bad life choices.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, guess what?
What?
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night. And TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 Night Vision Goggle to the Maul C1 Plus and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. I really don't know what's going on in his house, but it can't be good because he's out at night, past curfew, and that's bad. He should follow rules.
Okay. Is he really past curfew? How old is this kid? We've never established his name, or his age, I mean.
TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark! TNVC, now with financing. Own or finance the night. So, anyway, joining us, Michael Grasso. How's it going, Mike?
It's going pretty good.
Is it fun to watch the magic happen, or is it just kind of ridiculous and you're like, wow, how do these people have jobs?
No, it's Hollywood.
Ah, you know. So, for those that don't know, and they should know, but they don't, can you say who you are, what you do, and we'll hop right into the topic of today's show, which I've just suddenly realized as I said that we didn't actually go over it before the show in detail. So this will be really awesome.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. It'll be basically an ambush.
Oh, you know, just fight out of the ambush, Michael.
Yep. Well, my name's Michael Grasso. Let's see. Just finished up 35 years with the Los Angeles Police Department. Came out here to Indianapolis, retired from L.A. During that time, let's say I got to play a little bit in Hollywood, and I got a funny feeling we're going to talk about Hollywood a little bit.
We're certainly going to talk about North Hollywood, and we might talk about Hollywood as well. But so you've that was a very condensed 35 years, which I appreciate because we've only got 42 minutes, actually. But one of the, we'll talk, which would you rather talk about first, Hollywood or North Hollywood?
Well, when you talk about North Hollywood, you want to talk about the North Hollywood shootout?
I mean, I'd kind of like to a little bit, and specifically, I'd like to talk about some of the changes that came as part of that, because I don't think people really understand the historical significance behind the event. And correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the, in my mind, most of the major changes in how law enforcement is conducted throughout the country stems from certain watershed moments like the Newhall shooting or the FBI gunfight or North Hollywood. In this case, North Hollywood was really interesting to me because, one, it actually happened when I was old enough to remember it, whereas the Miami thing, well, I was alive, but, you know, I was three. So North Hollywood, I remember the coverage, and I remember a little bit about all of that, but that significantly changed some of the tools the police had available to them.
I think what occurs is you have agencies that are very difficult, especially large agencies, NYPD, 40,000 officers, or LAPD with 10,000 officers. When you want to change something, I think what occurs is someone, a bean counter, starts saying, wow, if we change that, it's going to cost 10,000 times X.
Right.
So what we need, unfortunately, is something to occur, an incident to occur nationally that will force the bean counters to be quiet long enough to get the tactical guys to say, we really need to change this.
Right.
And North Hollywood was a big change for us. Although rifles, 45 caliber, several things were already in the works.
Mm-hmm.
They were up in front of the police commission, but no one really wanted to hang their hat on it.
Right.
And then, of course, something like North Hollywood occurs. You have officers running off to a local gun shop, B&B at the time, and running in and saying, there's a huge shootout a few miles away. We don't know what to do.
Do you have any rifles?
Do you have any rifles and maybe some ammunition, and dragging those weapons out? And, of course, afterwards, someone like you or Melody is looking at it going, okay, wait, they took rifles out of boxes that are not sighted in.
Yeah, well.
And ran. Well, the good part is they never got to shoot those.
Right.
But on the same, in the same instance, they were there at the scene.
Right.
So that was very important.
One of the major changes that seems to have stemmed from that is the inclusion of like a patrol rifle program in almost every major agency nationally on some level or another. And you kind of alluded to it. That it was sort of already up in front of the police board.
Commission,
excuse me. But as far as how, I mean, because you were there when it happened, not I don't know if you were there at North Hollywood on scene as it happened, but you were certainly in the environment afterwards. What was the atmosphere like, I guess, and what was the conversation, if you remember?
Well, as for being there, we were actually all shooting bonus. So there's an interesting side story, I guess. We're a bunch of SWAT guys. We were all shooting bonus that morning. And bonus is a paid course of fire. So basically what happens is you go and you shoot it. And if you retain a certain level, you get paid extra amount for your paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So if you remember the actual videos that came out, you saw three SWAT coppers engage the second suspect behind his vehicle.
Right.
And one of the SWAT coppers was in shorts.
Yeah.
They came from the bonus line. When we were on the bonus line and the call came out, they jumped in their hoopty and went out to North Hollywood from down at the Dodger Stadium where the academy is. And then we got there afterwards.
Right.
And then there was the whole scene all night long because they thought there was a third suspect. But patrol rifle, for us, the difficulty was that the modern AR rifle was really a SWAT-type weapon. So at that point, the only units that had a 5.56, 223 weapon were SWAT. And when we started to ask for that, the problem was pretty simple. SWAT didn't want to give up something that they had. And what we found is a lot of agencies throughout the United States were the same way. Specialized units had specialized equipment. And to say, well, it's not specialized. First responders, if you look at how many shootings a specialized unit like SWAT or something gets involved in, it's really small.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things is if you go to Quantico, to behavioral sciences, one of the first things you'll learn when you're talking about serial murderers is how many serial murders have been captured by behavioral sciences unit, you know, the FBI serial murder team, and the number is zero. They're all caught by first responders, guys that are on the scene, guys that pulled them over for some kind of traffic thing. So it's logical that the rifle should be in the black and white.
Right.
Right there at the scene, because they're the first responders. They're the guys right there. And that's the logic that we used, and it was irrefutable.
Right. We'll talk about that a little bit more. We got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Michael Grasso. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatter guns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories and pre-order the new EDC X9, which is a 15-round Glock 19-sized firearm that retains some of the best qualities of a 1911 and puts it in a nice, small, concealable package at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Michael Grasso about all sorts of stuff, and we were discussing on the break how I am a horrible human being for not giving you like talking points and all that. But you were talking about patrol rifles and how when they started to be implemented from more of a department-wide area, that some of the specialized units were giving some pushback because, well, this is the thing that makes us special, and we don't want other people to have this thing. And like you know, I'm very fortunate and I get to deal with a lot of different police departments where I get to either go train with some officers from there or whatever. And it's always struck me as kind of odd where like, well, we have a different pistol for SWAT than patrol officers. And I'm like, why? And, you know, and then they give some reason and I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. So the logic you guys were using is that the first responders are much more likely to actually get engaged with the bad guys outside of like barricaded subjects or whatever.
Well, and that was it. We had to come up with a actual policy that had to deal with the actual use of the weapon. So,
right.
And then right on the tail of this comes immediate action, rapid deployment, which is basically that diamond formation for going into schools and
right.
Anybody can deal with. So the rifle itself, it was pretty interesting because although a lot of agencies had rifles in their cars, a lot of sheriff's departments had rifles because the guys were working L cars by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a shotgun and a rifle in the car. So we had throughout the United States plenty of agencies that had already been carrying rifles, mini 14s and ARs and different types of rifles. But when Larry Mudgett and myself were called upon to try to come up with this program, LAPD is kind of strange. They have a FTU, a firearms training unit, and that breaks down into a firearm section that teaches the basic firearms. And then they have a tactics section that teaches what you do with the firearm after you learn the basic. So I was one of the senior instructors in tactics, and of course Larry was the senior instructor in firearms, having left SWAT. And so they grabbed him and I, and we went in front of the commission, and we went in front of a bunch of people trying to explain to them why we needed rifles. And the good thing was we just pointed north towards North Hollywood, and that was enough. But when we started to do that, one of the things that everyone wanted in the chain of command was, well, we want to know who in the United States is using this and how. And honestly, we couldn't find anyone with a real program for utilizing and instituting a rifle in the vehicle, although they had rifles in
right.
the vehicle. So that's where it started. So it started out as the UPR, the Urban Police Rifle Program, and then changed to the police rifle program later on. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was going to ask, it seems pretty common in all sorts of areas, especially when we're talking about like applied violence, which at the end of the day is what most of this is. where people expect that just equipping themselves with a certain whatever tool will suddenly imbue them with the knowledge to use it. Whoever wields this AR and is worthy will have the power of Pat Rogers. You know what I mean?
I do. It's like, if you can remove this sword from the stone, then all of a sudden you are Miyamoto Musashi. You know how to wield this sword.
When right.
In reality, I mean, all you did is someone gave you a hammer. Do you actually know how to hit the nail? And our system, we started out at 100 yards,
mm-hmm.
zeroing in and doing everything at 100 yards, even though the national average for an urban police rifle shooting was like 65 yards. But we said, well, you can shoot. And we made everyone, there's certain LAPD things that they draw, we've always driven. And one is that before you can put an optic on your weapon, you had to be able to do all the course, everything with iron sights. So that was the actual building of the course, which was great because it was the first iteration, basically.
Right.
And then over the next 10 years or so, it turned into the program that it is now. And then that's taught throughout the United States. Some variation of it is taught all over the place.
Do you think the implementation of... So it used to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not and have never been a police officer. It used to be that long guns sort of got deployed when things were really bad or maybe they were getting really bad. And it seems like more and more agencies are recognizing the value in deploying the long guns early to kind of almost preempt them getting really bad. I don't know. Do you kind of see like the kernel of the question I'm asking?
Yeah, no, I definitely do. Because our deployment, in the beginning, we had a deployment criteria, which was, if the suspect was in a position of advantage in an open area, and if he had a weapon greater than a handgun, and if he was utilizing this cover against the officers. I mean, there was so many to make everyone happy. The deployment criteria narrowed down the use of the rifle very, very thin piece.
Right.
But then after a while, that we argued from the beginning, it's a firearm. It should be deployed the same way we deploy our handguns or our shotguns. We don't have a specific deployment for the shotgun. Why do we need one for the rifle? And it took a little time, took a few years for that to be accepted because they wanted to really see, are guys going to use this rifle instead of anything else? Are they
right.
going to take the rifle indoors? And then we're going to have people shooting 5.56s through houses. Well, the rifle program was like, yeah, that's okay, because in reality, guess what happens to the 5.56 when it goes through a wall board? We were showing them, look at this study. We went out and built walls and we shot through them, and it's actually better to use this because it's breaking up in pieces. And, it's not, you use a slug in the house and it's in another house, especially in California where,
right.
where it's, everything's thin.
Did
I answer that question,
yeah,
or did I kind of
just
go around in a big circle and leave you wanting? Because that's what my wife says.
That's all this is one big circle.
So I have a question for you. Was that just coming out of ignorance and fear of what they thought, was it public perception of what the rifle would be if their officers were using them too hastily, or?
I think they were scared. Looking back now, I think politicians were afraid of, and this is all around the assault weapon ban, so you got to think about that too.
Right.
That they were actually afraid of deploying something so militaristic that people would just look at it and go, oh my, Because I remember articles coming out in the L.A. Times saying LAPD gets military full automatic weapons from the Marines. Well, LAPD has had a relationship with Pendleton and the Marines since its inception.
Right.
Our academy is just like the Marine boot camp. It's not our academy instructors, lots of Marines. If you look at any one branch of the military in LAPD, it's Marines. So when this all happened, we went to the Marines and said, we don't have the money for 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 weapons. And the Marines have a program, well, the military has a program, and they basically gave us 1,000 at the time. I think it was 1,000. I don't remember the exact number. But a very large number of A1s, unused A1s, and we took them and removed the full auto capability out of them, made them semis, and that's what we taught with. We taught with triangular handguard A1s, and that's was our first rifle until we were able to start buying Surefire dedicated handguard lights, and then from there sights, and then from there M4 type. I mean, it was the whole thing.
Hold that thought, because we got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Michael Grasso. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz, light!" ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your... Oh, she put her hands up in front of her face. Just helping your co-hosts see through their eyelids.
Ouch.
When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 30% off everything at the Surefire.com web store except suppressors and batteries by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS. That is ALLTHELUMENS at Surefire.com. No space at the end of that or it doesn't work. Anyway.
So what was funny there is I saw your hands sneaking to your pocket.
Yeah,
and I'm
I know.
Like, how can I do this while still taking notes? And I need a screen. I need to put a screen up.
No, I'm only going to do it once. It's like blood in, blood out. And now you're the co-host because I hit you with the light.
No, you said once. That was twice.
Oh, I can't count. That's why I'm on the radio. Anyway, we're talking with Michael Grasso and amusing other non-existent people in the booth. There's a fly on the wall, and they're amused as well. So you were saying how the perception was, oh, my God, military weapons and stuff like that. And it's really funny to me whenever, like, the militarization of the police comes up. 'Cause you look at, like, the history of policing, and you look at, like, what Hamer did to Bonnie and Clyde, which was a military ambush with military weapons to effect an arrest, and that was really common. I mean, oh, this person's going to be here. Let's set up an L with machine guns. Or, you know, using belt feds on rioters or whatever. And it's like, but now people are all the police are so militarized. I'm like, is that because they're not wearing bowler hats and like coats? Why? It's, you know what I mean?
I do. A very interesting thing is, and this, I think this occurred right before I got to LAPD. I went into the academy in 1980. But somewhere around there, Simi Valley PD, which is a small, sleepy little town just northwest of Los Angeles, they turned around and had their officers, patrol officers, go to a suit with a dark blue jacket and where their weapons were covered. So basically patrol was in a suit. And they tried that because, you know, it's California. So, and they tried that for a little while, which didn't work. But regardless, yes, it's the military. I mean, if you think about what policing is, and to serve and protect and to protect for us. The real thing is, it is a military. We have rank structure. We salute. We deal with a little tiny section of the populace. I mean, if you could take, and if I was the god of policing, if I was able to remove one thing from policing and give it to another agency to deal with, and that would be tickets. Because if you took tickets away from the law, the regular police, people would love them as much as firemen.
Yeah.
You know, if you can just get rid of when you look in the mirror and you look over your shoulder and you see the blue and reds, oh, that's okay, because they don't give tickets. Oh, I love the police, because that's what it is. So it's that military part.
It's funny because I went and had lunch with my son at his school, and he's in second grade. And I'm sitting at the lunch table, and the principal walks over to say hello. And I'm 34 years old. I own my own business. I've got people that I'm kind of answerable to, but I don't have a boss per se. And the principal walks up, and I'm like, "What'd I do?" Like that was the immediate. And I'm sitting in this little, you know, second grade size chair at the lunch table with my son and his friend. And
how did you fit?
I got like a cheek and a half on there. But anyway, it was a very sturdy chair, thankfully. But anyway, like, it's funny because I'm watching my kid and his friend kind of like hunch up like, oh man, it's the man.
It's the authority figure.
And I did the same thing. And I'm like, wait a second. And it was funny too, because like I've driven 200,000 miles in the last 2 years. So I've gotten pulled over. And I don't get that so much anymore when I get pulled over, just because I'm really familiar with it. I'm not too worried about it.
You've been pulled over so much.
Yeah. You know who's been pulled over a lot is Melody.
I have nothing to say here. I plead the fifth.
Yeah, I wouldn't talk about this on air.
I have no independent recollection of the incident.
Yeah, exactly.
If you can provide me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do not wish to create joinder.
Wow.
Ooh.
No, seriously though, it's like I get that. I mean, I really get it. Like, especially if you know, the only interactions you've had have been hearing about bad things that have happened, because they very rarely publicize like good things that cops do. Like, I understand the greater perception of, ooh, but like when you really look at it, when you really look at the history of it, never in our history have we had a police force nationally that is more respectful of the Constitution than right now. I mean,
it's true. Absolutely true. You know, it doesn't matter. Public perception, the truth and perception, although they don't always run parallel, the truth hardly matters when it comes to perception. I can be at a party and my wife could say, oh, yeah, my husband was a detective with LAPD and spent the last 10 years hunting serial murderers. And people will go, ooh, ah. And then somebody will walk up to me and say, so I got this ticket once. That's their perception of the police department. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you've never written a ticket. Their perception is, yeah, once this police officer was really, really, really mean to me. And I usually say things like, well, was he in a car or on a motorcycle? And they'll always say, well, he was on a motorcycle. And then I'll just smile and say, well, that was a motor officer. And, you know.
They're different.
They are absolutely different. There's a joke where everybody's in line to get into heaven, and there's a man standing there waiting. He's almost to the end of the line, and St. Peter's guiding them all in, and a motor officer walks right by everybody in the line and just goes right into heaven. And the poor citizen that's been waiting to get into heaven says, wow, seriously, I've been waiting here, you know, my whole life to get into heaven. And look at him. Look at that motor officer. He says, oh, that's not a motor officer. That was God. He just wishes he was a motor officer. So the whole perception, the problem is that there are certain parts of the police department that's all they do.
Right.
And you're not, like, if you get pulled over by a motor cop, you're getting a ticket. It doesn't matter who you are because that's their job. But a normal patrol officer, it's not their job. They're first responders. So they're the ones that are going to get to the scene. They're the ones that are going to deploy the rifle or the slug shotgun. They're the ones that are going to put an end or contain the incident right off the bat. That's their job. Now, if it becomes a hostage situation or a barricaded suspect, then you call in the guys that have been practicing and doing this and have the equipment to deal with that. But the chances are you're going to be the first one there. We had a couple of incidents involving schools and school shootings and stuff like that. So we wanted to have equal or greater firepower. What was it? I gotta remember the name of the movie, but oh, the New Centurions, years and years ago, the New Centurions, when the training officer is speaking to his new trainee, he's talking about, you know, the suspect raises a fist, you take out your nightstick. The suspect has a knife, you take out your gun. So it's like you don't meet with equal force. That's not our duty. Our duty is to stop the threat of serious bodily injury and or death. And you do that with sometimes violence of action, overwhelming force. You put a stop to it. You don't roll around for 40 minutes and, you know, there's a great incident that occurred with LAPD that kind of took some of the tarnish off the badge. You don't roll around for 20, 30 minutes with somebody hitting them 56 times and with glancing blows. You stop it, period.
Right.
And that's what the rifle did. The rifle had the ability to, it's kind of like that same shotgun, slide action on a shotgun. The deployment of the rifle changed people's minds about what they were about to do. Is this going to be a suicide by cop? Because now we have 10 guys showing up and they all have rifles. So.
Right. You mentioned a movie and we're going to talk about that when we get back, but we have to go to break. So you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel DeVance, country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel DeVance, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Now Available. I mean, email me and we'll put you right here. This could be you and me talking about you. But oh, come on, you can laugh into the microphone.
That was good.
That was funny, right?
Like an advertisement for an advertisement.
Something like that. I don't call it a downturn. I call it a right sizing.
Last time I laughed, I got yelled at, and my computer privileges were revoked.
You were laughing at a graphics exchange format.
It was really funny.
Or interface. What's a?
It's a gift.
That's right. Tam's not here right now. She knows the answer, but I almost tricked her. She's like, actually. Anyway. We're talking with Michael Grasso. We've been talking about patrol rifles and kind of like the after effects of the North Hollywood shootout. And if I had been really thinking, I'll have to have you back because you could probably speak pretty well to the shootout itself. That'll be a different episode some other time. But you mentioned movies, and one of the things that I know that you've gotten to do is be the technical advisor on quite a few Hollywood films and productions. You're making a face like, yeah, more than I wanted to, but it pays the bills.
And you know what? That's actually the answer. What had occurred, pretty simple, was I was on my way to becoming an instructor, doing stuff off duty, and I went to gun sight and got to be an adjunct instructor at gun sight. I did a stint with Phil Singleton one summer teaching HK Academy MP5 stuff. And I was really enjoying it, working with my heroes, Larry Mudgett, Scotty Reitz, and John Helms, Mark Fleischman, all these names that I was growing up with and shooting with. And then what happened was kind of interesting. I was working a division in LAPD called Hollywood Division. I had just left. It was right after the Olympics. I had just left West Bureau Crash, which is a pretty famous gang unit. And I was on my way to get promoted to a training officer. So I'm working Hollywood division, and we wanted to do some training. And since my background was kind of tactical, this was before, of course, I went to the academy, but my feeling was tactical. We were going to do a training day, and everybody, we were just going to use our regular firearms. And I kind of raised my hand, being the new training guy, and said, I don't think that's a good idea. And they were, well, why not? That's the way we've always done it. And I said, yeah, but that's just a recipe for somebody getting hurt. And they said, okay, wise ass. Oh, can I say that on the radio?
And you did. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, wise guy. You can always cut that out.
You'll have to slip Joe a five. No, it's fine. Anyway, continue.
Okay, wise guy. What would you do? And I said, well, we're in Hollywood division. Don't they make movies here? There's got to be like a place where we can get the guns they use in Hollywood. And they said, okay, fine. Go do it.
Yeah.
And I went to a place. I did a little research and found a place called Ellis Mercantile. Now, Ellis Mercantile is a prop house that bought all their weapons from Paramount and all the old studios that did all the Westerns, all this great stuff. And I walked in there one day in uniform and said, you know, we're going to do this training. And they said, oh, well, come with us to the back room where all the firearms are. And they had bins and bins of rubber guns, stuff that they used in the movies that maybe the hammer was broken off or part of the barrel was broken off. And they were just going to throw them out. And they basically said, take what you want. So I did. Took a bunch of weapons. We went back, had this great training day. Guys weren't worried about dropping their real live weapons. We weren't worried about pointing weapons at each other because they were inert rubber guns. And there was no firearms were allowed in the training area, which was great. So we started this no firearms in the training area thing. And when I brought the weapons back, there was a prop master. In those days, the prop masters, of course, go to the armories to pick up all the weapons. And the prop master's name was Sammy Moore. And he said, hey, are you real or are you fake? And I'm like, look down at my badge, the normal LAPD arrogance, and said, yeah, looks real to me, you know. And Sammy said, can I ask you a bunch of questions? And I said, sure. So he asked me a bunch of police technical questions. And then he said to me, okay, he says, give me your name and number. We have to send you a check. And I said, no, I'm on duty. You can't send me a check.
Right.
And he said, oh. He says, well, can you come back? It was a few days later. Can you come back a few days later and maybe come back off duty? I want you to talk to the director, you know, blah, 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 blah. I said, okay. So I came back a few days later before my shift. And I walk in, and who's sitting there but Clint Eastwood? And I was like, mouth went dry and talked to me about a movie. And they sent me a couple $100, which in 1984, 85 was a lot of money. And I was like, well, wait a second now. I just answered like three questions and I made more money than I made a whole weekend teaching.
Right.
And so basically what happened was Ellis Mercantile said, why don't you come and why don't we get some business cards made up and
yeah.
And if prop masters need information, and that's how it started. And I found out that I could do one movie because I'm working full time. I'm a full time police officer.
Right.
So it's hard to get days off. And so I figured out that I can do one movie in 2 weeks and make more than a high-level instructor would make in a year.
Right.
So I went, well, I can go the instructor route and, like, work really hard and do all this stuff and get a name as an instructor, or I can just go here and do this and, you know, maybe my name at the end of the credits, maybe not, but who cares because this is good money. And so I basically went with the money.
Nice. Nice. What's your favorite movie that, because we're running out of time, but what's your favorite movie you worked on out of curiosity?
Oh, that's hard. I think the easier question would be, who's the favorite person I ever worked with?
Sure.
Can I go that route instead?
Yeah.
And I'm going to go with, and maybe Melody probably doesn't even know him because no one, you know. But I worked 3 movies with this guy called Sean Connery. And
you know, there's actually a chance that I wouldn't, but
yeah, yeah. See, I did Hunt for Red October. I did The Untouchables, and I did The Rock. And in fact, he called the house one night, and my wife answered the phone, and you know, and I was doing something. Then my wife half covers the phone and says, "There's a guy on the phone with a really bad Sean Connery accent, and he wants to talk to you." And I pick up the phone, and they were doing The Rock at the time, and I had done some work already with him and the Tommy Tomlinson, the prop master, and I'm like, listening, and they go, "Oh, yes, Mr. Connery." You know, and then my wife realizes now that that actually was Sean Connery, and she said in the past, you know, hey, you know, she'd like a boy toy of Sean Connery. And now I'm saying, well, you had your opportunity to actually say hi to him, but you just told him without covering the phone that that Sean Connery is doing a really bad accent of himself.
Nice.
But that's why it's an ex-wife, right?
There you go. See, that's a great place to end because we're out of time. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about this stuff. That's awesome. Hopefully you will make the drive again and we'll talk more. But I do appreciate it very much. So, let's see. Oh, yeah, the end credits. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And, hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.